when you validate their feelings during the meltdown, they continue to be aggressive or even escalate the aggression. When you tell them, stop hitting, that's not safe, that hurts, they hit harder. When you tell them to take a deep breath, they scream at you or slam the door in your face. Does that sound familiar? If so, we have those meltdowns too, and this is why I started changing my approach to this.
Welcome to the SensoryWise Solutions podcast for parents, where parents can get real, actionable strategies to support kids with sensory processing disorder. I'm Laura, OT and mom to Liliana, a sensory sensitive kid who inherited my anxiety and my love for all things Disney. Consider me your new OT mom bestie. I know my stuff, but I also know what it's really like in the trenches of parenting a child with sensory processing disorder.
Okay, mom, enough about me. Let's start the podcast.
Welcome back to the podcast, everybody. I'm excited and a little nervous to talk about this topic today because even though I am very confident in my approach and what I think about it, it is always met with some controversy, and I'm going to go into that in a little bit. But I want to say, you can probably hear my fan blowing in the background. I was debating on turning it off, but it is so hot today in Southern California. We're not used to this hot, muggy weather, so you're just going to have to deal with it so that I can be comfortable. I'm accommodating my needs while I talk to you today about redirecting aggressive behaviors during your child's sensory or anxiety meltdowns. So where this is coming from, I shared a reel on Instagram probably a couple months ago now at the time of this podcast being published and has over 1 million views now. So you can head to my Reels page if you want to pause this and listen to it and watch that before you come here, and maybe you can scroll through the comments and see the levels of controversy that comes up about it. There's a lot of different opinions, so much so that it made me second guess what I was doing, and then I recentered myself and was like, no, I'm really confident in why I do this, and I'm going to continue to do this, and I'm going to continue educating parents of neurodivergent kids to do this. The people who have the most controversial opinions about this method are people who have kids of neurotypical brains who maybe don't experience as intense meltdowns, the aggressive meltdowns that we parents of neurodivergent kids do. So if you're one of those parents or therapists or anyone who's heard about this strategy of redirecting aggressive behaviors and been on the fence about it, or maybe you're doing it and you're like, oh, I don't know if this is the right thing, I'm going to share my personal and professional reasoning behind it to get to clear some things up. I even had to make a follow-up reel to that reel because I was getting so much opposing opinions, which is fine, right? Everybody can have their opinion, but it was clear that there wasn't enough context to what I was sharing. And some people just see the reel and don't read the caption and just go straight into like, well, what about this? Blah, blah, blah. So by the time you are done with this podcast today, you'll either feel really solid in your plan of responding to aggressive meltdowns or have a new strategy to try for the next one. So before we get fully into it, let me set the scene a little bit for you and where I'm coming from with this. All right. So you have a child with big feelings. Maybe they're neurodivergent, maybe they have anxieties, maybe they have sensory sensitivities, whatever it is. But they have larger, more intense meltdowns than the average child. Maybe they last 20 or more minutes and typically involve some form of big aggression, like hitting, kicking, biting, pushing, throwing, all of these things. And they don't have to be a 2-year-old. I know a lot of 7, 8, 9, 10, 11-year-olds who still have these really big meltdowns. And when you validate their feelings during the meltdown, they continue to be aggressive or even escalate the aggression. When you tell them, stop hitting, that's not safe, that hurts, they hit harder. When you tell them to take a deep breath, they scream at you or slam the door in your face. Does that sound familiar? If so, We have those meltdowns too. And this is why I started changing my approach to this. I also would resort to, in those moments, trying to model deep breaths, saying hands are not for hitting, all of those things that I just talked about. And then I realized in those moments, deep in those meltdowns, my child did not have those skills to control her actions to her body yet. She didn't have the executive functioning skills, the impulse control. She didn't have that yet. And to be honest, do most adults have a lot of that impulse control? There's still so many adults, myself included, who say things, do things that we know logically that we shouldn't do, but we still can't access those skills at that time. But outside of that, we pretty much have more executive functioning skills than our kids. So I realized in those moments, this was a skills deficit. Great. So typically when there's a skills deficit, you want to teach that skill and build that skill. However, in the middle of a meltdown is not the moment to teach that skill. That is a waste of your breath. It's probably going to escalate them. It's going nowhere. You have to be regulated in order to learn something. So in these really big sensory anxiety, neurodivergent, big feeling meltdowns, the brain is in a mode where it wants to protect the body. It is in fight or flight mode. It is an uncontrollable urge for them to do something that they think will make their body feel better. Sometimes it's seeking a certain input by pushing or hitting. Sometimes it's literally just releasing a bunch of that energy. Whatever it is, their brain is sending signals to the body and controlling the body, and they have little control over their brain to put the brakes on their body. So for me, instead of asking my lack of executive functioning skills 4-year-old at the time, now she's 5, but the moment when I realized this, instead of asking her to go against that urge and put the brakes on and control her impulses to fight that urge of her nervous system that her nervous system was giving to her body, I decided to go with it, but see if I could mold or transform it into something that wouldn't leave a bruise on my body, that wouldn't break furniture at home, something that was a little safer for everybody in the environment. The way that I envision it is, and I don't even know if this is accurate, if there's actually a train track like this, but go with me. I envision it's kind of like when a train is going super fast speed, right? And we all know that trains have a really hard time stopping. They can't just stop on a whim. So it's like a train going super fast speed, and there's a fork in the train tracks. I don't know if you can actually have a fork in the train tracks, but I feel like I've seen a visual of this somewhere. But there's a fork in the train tracks where you could go left or right. On the current track that the train is on, there's a ton of people it could run into and hit and severely injure or kill. But since the train is way too fast to stop, it's not going to stop in time. It's going to end up harming all of those people and probably the people on board the train from such a sudden stop. It's better to just redirect the train to that side track with all of its momentum while it's still going fast, and then it misses all of that. Hopefully that vision makes sense, because that's what I envision in my head, is that your child is already having this really big aggressive momentum in their body in at this moment, and they are not stopping when you say stop. And in fact, the more you try to stop them, go against them, the bigger their aggression gets. So your only goal at this time is to keep everyone safe. You want to protect those people on the train tracks from getting injured and people on the train getting damaged. So redirecting that fast moving train, or redirecting that child with the meltdown because they don't have time or the capacity to stop, redirecting it to something that is safe is your best option. So here's some specific examples of what I'm talking about how to redirect that behavior. And again, if you haven't seen the Instagram reel, I will put a link in the show notes. I think that you should definitely check it out, because it will give you a lot of good visual examples of what I'm going to talk about. So the most important thing is that you want to try to replace the sensory input with that they're seeking with something that matches it as best as you can. So if it's input to their hands, try to give them something to do with their hands. If it's input with their legs, try to give them something to do with their legs. So here's an example. If your child is hitting you or another person, you can't hit me, you can hit this pillow. If a child is throwing their toy across the room or about to throw their toy across the room, you can't throw that toy, you can throw this balloon or we can go outside and throw ice. You can't push your brother. If you need to push something, try to push this wall down. You can't kick. I'm seeing your feet need something to do. You can stomp on this cardboard. You could help like recycle the cardboard. You can also ask them to rip up cardboard if they're like ripping things or crumpling paper, which could have a really good heavy input to the hands, and it takes a lot of strength, especially for little hands. The idea is that you are saying, hey, I see your body is really needing this physical energy input or something someplace to put your aggression. It is so big, it's coming out of your body. It's not enough to take a breath in those moments for some of these kids who are having those really, really big needs. So you are seeing those needs and offering them something safe to do. Okay, so now that I've shared some examples of that and explained a little bit of the reasoning why I do it, I'm going to share some of the common themes or the common controversies about it that I've been hearing, that I've been reading in the comments and seeing people bring up. So some people say things like, isn't it confusing to teach my child to hit something after telling them not to hit? Like, hands are not for hitting. I get that. Here's my response. My boundary, when I set it for my child, is not no hitting. It's you can't hit me, or I can't let you hit that glass jar. I can't let you hit the fish tank. I can't let you hit your sister. So hitting other people and property, yes, I agree. There should be a boundary about that. But my child is not harming anyone if she hits a pillow or punches a pillow. There's another one where someone mentioned, this just feeds into aggression and it teaches my child that every time they're mad, they need to hit something. I want them to learn to take deep breaths instead of hitting. Here's my response. Absolutely. That would be the goal, the perfect thing to get to a place where our kids can be so pissed off that they can raise their hand about to hit something and stop, take a deep breath, and then just like all of a sudden be fine. That would be great. That would be the goal. I'm sure many people have reached that goal. There's going to be a lot of people who that is really far out there and they need something today. So what is their option until then? Do they just keep taking the hits? Do they just keep taking the kicks? Do they keep going against the grain, trying to get their child's body to stop doing the thing that makes it feel like it's protecting itself? So for the record, though, I want to say here, I 100% believe that we should be teaching healthy coping skills for emotions. Yes, like deep breathing, taking a step back, expressing our needs verbally versus physically. All of those things are still very important and things that I also teach my daughter. I teach my daughter those things between each meltdown. I'm constantly role-playing with her, talking about scripts, preparing her for triggering environments, all of the things. And it mostly helps. I see it sinking in slowly, but it's a long process and we still have bad days. Like every single person who's listening to this, we all have bad days. And sometimes on those days, we have less control over our body. So in those moments, instead of her hitting me, when I can't control that urge, I can give her something else to punch or hit. And guess what? I now have less scratches and bruises, and I'm less physically worn down after meltdowns because I am giving her something else. We have less broken toys from being thrown because now she throws ice. Do I think that when she's 25 and gets angry at something that like her boss or partner said, that she's going to need me to hand her a bucket of ice or think that she's actually going to grab a bucket of ice? No. I do think maybe by then she'll have learned what her body needs in those moments. Maybe she does need to have a punching bag in her room and exercise, which is completely functional, by the way. There's a lot of people who have punching bags in their garage and basements and attics and in their rooms, and they go and like get out that physical energy when they're angry, and then they come back, take a deep breath, and have a healthy, functional, emotionally safe conversation with the person or whatever it was that had those big feelings for them. Maybe Liliana will take up ceramics, except for the sensory piece of that. That I didn't think through. But there's this part in ceramics, I remember, where you have to like throw the clay to like get the bubbles out. Like that feels really good to the body. The point is, I don't envision what I'm teaching my child today for her to be when she's 30, like going to like punch someone. I'm talking about right now, in this season of dealing with meltdowns, where she is rushing to hit me and kick me, when I see her start to do that, I am going to set the boundary that she can't hit me or anybody else. If she needs to hit, she could hit this, or she could take deep breaths with me. Sure, I will also offer a second option. And then I'm also going to continue spending all of my time teaching my daughter emotional regulation skills outside of those moments. And the next time we do something that I know is going to be a trigger for her, I will remind her, hey, we're about to do XYZ. I know it can be really frustrating when it doesn't work out the way you want to. When you start feeling your hands need to do something, you can squeeze your hands in your lap. You can ask me for a hug, or we can go outside and throw ice. It's your choice. It's not okay for you to hit me or throw the toy. So setting up that boundary, reminding her of her tools, things that have worked for her in the past. And this has been working very well for us. And she is still very emotionally intelligent. And I do not see her increasing her aggression. Again, she still has some bad days like all of us. But if you are a parent of a neurodivergent child and you are dealing with these really intense aggressive behaviors that are really hard to contain. Okay, can we talk about that? That as your kids get older and they're hitting and throwing shoes and other very harmful things, physical containment gets harder and harder. And it's still sometimes necessary for us on really, really bad days. But when nothing else is working and redirecting that energy does, I'm going to definitely take that. And I want you to feel confident in doing that too if you choose to do that. And I feel like I have to end this, like I always say, this kind of disclaimer. This might not work for every child, every child's needs, every family's needs. This might trigger some other trauma that's coming up. You know what's best for your family. I am simply sharing you my perspective, my experience, what has been working for us. And as a professional, talking about the idea of the sensory input that might be feeling good for your child, I hope that that gives you a little bit more confidence and encouragement and not to fear the research that people are saying this is going to cause your child to become more aggressive in the future. You can look more into it, try it out, and see if overall it feels good to you as a family. Okay, so this episode mostly focused on what to do during the meltdowns and what to do with those aggressive behaviors. But one of the best places that you can have impact on your child's behavior, even during the meltdowns, is when you prepare them before the meltdowns, how you handle it after the meltdowns, and what you do between the meltdowns to better support the regulation. And I have a course called Demystifying Meltdowns that you can grab today for $57 at theotbutterfly.com/meltdownsworkshop. It's available in Spanish and French and English with captions and transcripts. I'm so excited to have this out there for you. I will dive deep into each of those four stages of the meltdowns, including examples, strategies, scripts to try, and give you a little bit more insight into the neurodivergent brain and what happens to it during meltdowns. If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider rating it and leaving a review, which helps other parents find me as well. Want to learn more from me? I share tons more over on Instagram at @theotbutterfly. See you next time.